Hi there. Welcome to episode 71 of Never on the Back Foot podcast. Our topic for today's discussion is dissecting India's campaign in this T20 World Cup. We will be discussing some key topics and let's understand what went wrong with India this time around. Let's get started. India exited the T20 World Cup after New Zealand beat Afghanistan to book the second semi-final spot. I mean, for a team that was counted as one of the favourites, you know, ahead of this tournament, India did suffer two debilitating losses, and this was at the hands of Pakistan and New Zealand. And with three wins against Afghanistan, Scotland and Namibia in the fag end of the tournament, still not being enough as India ensured a group stage exit, and this was the first time since the 2012 edition of the World Cup. Let's start off with India's problems. First up was the fluctuating batting order, the lack of clarity at the top. Now, India's famed batting lineup limped to a modest 110/7 against New Zealand. This was a week after they had managed 151/7 while facing an equally good Pakistan attack. Top Indian batsmen, including KL Rahul and Rohit Sharma, have shown little application after being invited to bat first in both their outings. And even though Kohli did make that fighting 57 against Pakistan, the total definitely proved insufficient. In four games, including the two warm-ups, India twice tried out two different opening combinations. The first choice seemingly being KL Rahul and Rohit Sharma, and the second being KL Rahul and Ishan Kishan. Both pairings looked great in the warm-ups, but succumbed early when it mattered the most, making one wonder why there were two different combinations tried, you know, in the first place. The juggle at the top led to an unclear approach in the power play. Against Pakistan, both KL Rahul and Rohit Sharma were undone by some quality pace. And against New Zealand, Kishan and Rahul were guilty of poorly executed strokes. Now this left extended pressure on the batters to follow because you have Kohli and Pandya who have been in indifferent forms themselves. In the second game, Rohit came at a less accustomed position of three and was forced to try and maximize on the, you know, remainder of the power play when he himself takes time to settle in. In the end, it turned out to be a hodgepodge exercise which was chaotic, and as Kohli summarized in the end, the team just wasn't brave enough. Lackluster with the new ball. Now, with Deepak Chahar not being a part of the main squad and Bhuvneshwar Kumar in scratchy form, India's new ball attack already looked like, you know, it lacked that proper wicket-taking ability. Varun Chakravarti is definitely a great prospect, but he's more of a restricting spinner who's more likely to get wickets when there's a bigger total to defend. With India's two totals of, you know, 151 and 110, it was certainly not enough. And Chakravarti's length and lack of turn didn't really bother either Pakistan or New Zealand. Bumrah did well to string two neat spells, but with Bhuvneshwar being underwhelming at the other end and Shami not quite being that new ball bowler, India let the batters ease their way to starts, leaving them in positions where they just couldn't claw their way back in. Ravi Ashwin could have been a better option to have, for he's known to have the knack to, you know, price out wickets at any point, but then hindsight is definitely a great gift. Let's now talk about the toss disadvantage. Kohli's luck with tosses has been historically rotten, and it's not something that's in anyone's hands, but with back-to-back toss losses, India has been at the wrong end of a massive disadvantage that most of the teams batting first are facing in this tournament. Teams batting first have lost 15 out of 19 matches so far, with Kohli himself admitting after the Pakistan loss that toss does play a major factor at this tournament, especially with dew creeping in the second half, and it complicates things further for the bowling team. With two big games lined up for India, one after, you know, right at the start, India's double coin loss pushed them on the back foot, and an underwhelming batting performance doesn't really help their cause after that. The demanding schedule that went against India. Now, most of the members of the Indian team arrived in the UK in May or Sri Lanka the following month, and they have spent the last 5 months shuttling from bubble to bubble. It's really how cricket is played these days, and Bumrah, even in the post-match presser, clearly indicated that the bubble and mental fatigue had crept in. Now, this we are looking at extended times away from families, and it is challenging. Post the remainder of the IPL 2021, India quickly moved into the World Cup bubble, making it a tiresome calendar for the core group and hardly any respite in sight with more cricket coming right after. And then, rather contrastingly, India did get that week-long break after the Pakistan game, leaving them with an awkward pause after that 10-wicket thrashing. And while that's not exactly an excuse for defeats, it didn't exactly help that most of the side experienced burnout before they even played the first game of such a big tournament. Inconsistent selections and the first-choice playing 11 didn't really play much together. Now, the team selections lacked consistency and, you know, pushing in Ishan Kishan as an opener instead of Rohit Sharma was a negative strategy versus New Zealand. Trying to shield Rohit was a signal to the opposition that India was clearly under a lot of pressure coming in. India's first-choice playing 11 has hardly played any T20 cricket together in the lead-up to this World Cup. Now, this has been a problem other than underperforming teams such as West Indies and Australia too. On paper, the team looks extremely strong, but when your batters have very little experience of playing alongside each other, it can get really difficult to find that collective rhythm and an aligned approach. While half of the current lot did feature on that long England tour, the other half was playing in Sri Lanka, playing in what appeared to be a second string side. However, as many as 6 players from the latter squad are a part of the World Cup group, with quite a few combinations playing together for the first time. For example, against Pakistan, Bumrah and Shami bowled together in a T20I together for the first time after almost 21 months. Rohit Sharma and KL Rahul last opened together in a T20I way back in March and before that, February 2020. The pandemic has definitely complicated things and so have the lack of T20Is this year with this combination. At the end of it all, India just looked like an assortment of good players, but hardly a good team combined which has played a lot of matches together. With 2 losses in their first 2 contests, India fell back considerably in the race for semi-finals with a lot happening off the field as well. Many of the big names failed to get going when under the pump, and though India did make a brief comeback, it just proved too late. Let's now have a look at individual player list performance analysis for India, keeping in mind the performances from the first 4 group matches. Rohit Sharma, 118 runs at 29.5 with a high score of 74 and strike rate of 151.28. While the Mumbai batter got going against Afghanistan and Scotland in style, his failures against Pakistan and New Zealand left the Indian middle order with too much to do against quality attacks. Yet, his 74 against Afghanistan was a quality knock. KL Rahul, 140 runs at 35, a high score of 69 and strike rate of 153.84. India's other opener too flopped in the first 2 games, while coming into his own against Afghanistan and Scotland. His 19-ball 50 gave him a point over Rohit in what was a very disappointing World Cup for his team. Virat Kohli, 68 runs at 34, high score of 57, strike rate 100. The Indian skipper's last competition as T20 captain ended in a very forgettable fashion. He held the innings together against Pakistan with a 49-ball 57 but got out at a crucial stage. His captaincy was poor, with baffling selections and uninspired field placements continuing to plague India in this event. Suryakumar Yadav, 17 runs at 17, high score of 11, strike rate 170. Suryakumar Yadav missed out on the crucial New Zealand encounter due to back spasms but got out too early against Pakistan. He had shown promise with his 8-ball 11 with a 6 of the threatening Shaheen Shah Afridi but ended up chasing a wide one from Hasan Ali and gifted his wicket to the opposition. Rishabh Pant, 78 runs at 39, high score of 39 and strike rate of 125.8. The only time India looked like in the contest against Pakistan was when Rishabh Pant was batting with Virat Kohli. He hit Hasan Ali for back-to-back sixes to lift the Indian scoring rate, but he got out too soon and the Indian innings fizzled out in the absence of initiative from other batters. He did better when he was sent up the order against Afghanistan, a place where he should look to bat in the future. Ishan Kishan, 4 runs, highest score 4, strike rate 50. Now, the talented wicketkeeper batter was at the receiving end of the management's approach, one which saw him open the innings after Suryakumar Yadav's missed New Zealand game, and he tried to do what he was told against a quality bowling attack. Alas, it didn't work out well. Hardik Pandya, 69 runs at 34.5, high score of 35 not out, strike rate of 153.33. He picked up 0 wickets at an economy of 10. While Pandya's batting can still serve the Indian side well, his returns as a fast bowling option has diminished quickly. He gave the Indian innings some sort of respectability against New Zealand and got going against Afghanistan, but conceding 40 runs in the 4 overs that he was able to bowl in the tournament doesn't really augur well for India. Bhuvneshwar Kumar, 0 wickets and the economy of 8.33. Bhuvneshwar Kumar was featured in just the Pakistan game and was benched for the rest of the tournament. While Kohli was in praise of the seamer ahead of the tournament, the faith wore off after an insipid performance. Ravindra Jadeja, 39 runs at 39, strike rate of 121.87, 4 wickets at 21.25 and economy of 6.53. Jadeja tried to keep the Indian innings afloat after more recognized batters failed in the first two games. He was especially impressive in his 19 ball 26 against New Zealand, which got India to a decent 110. He showed his magic with the ball in the Scotland encounter with his 3 for 15, and he had a much better World Cup. Ravichandran Ashwin, 3 wickets at 14.33, economy rate of 5.37. Not part of the playing 11 that lost the first two games, India's premier off-spinner couldn't really choose his opponents, but he did well after being selected against Afghanistan and Scotland. He overcame the conditions to prove that he can still be of use in the format. His 2 for 14 against Afghanistan ensured a massive win for India. Varun Chakravarti, 0 wickets and an economy of 6.45. India's mystery spinner failed to get a wicket in any of the three games he featured in. While he did provide control, he failed to fulfill his primary task of providing those crucial breakthroughs for India. Shardul Thakur, 0 runs, 0 wickets and an economy of 10.66. India's magic man failed to get going with the bat against New Zealand and was unimpressive with the few overs that he got to bowl in the tournament. Brought into the squad at the expense of Akshar Patel right before the World Cup, it seemed like the shock of the Pakistan loss forced to, put all the hopes on this Mumbai bowler, but he simply couldn't deliver. Mohammad Shami, 6 wickets at 16.83, economy of 8.53. Much like the Indian opener, Shami was underwhelming in the first two games. While he's India's finest fast bowlers in recent times, his overall T20I record remains modest to say the least. He returned with fine back-to-back performances in the Afghanistan and Scotland matches, but all in all, this World Cup didn't work out too well for him. Jasprit Bumrah, 5 wickets at 15.2, economy of 5.18. Perhaps the only Indian player to turn up for the tournament, he looked like India's best wicket-taking prospect in the first two games. India's poor form didn't hinder Bumrah as the class bowler continued to outfox the opposition batters with his speed and guile. Let's talk quickly about the qualification scenario as well. Now, New Zealand's win over Afghanistan meant that India was knocked out of the T20 World Cup. The New Zealand versus Afghanistan match was crucial for India and the fate was in the hands of Afghanistan. Obviously, India wanted Afghanistan to win against New Zealand to stay alive. It would then have been decided by the net run rate. India was going to play last and had a better run rate than Afghanistan and New Zealand before the game. They would have known the exact equation in the game against Namibia for them to qualify. But with New Zealand winning against Afghanistan, they ended up with 8 points, winning 4 out of the 5 matches after the loss against Pakistan, while maximum India could have reached was 6 points if they beat Namibia. Pakistan had already qualified for the semi-finals with 4 wins in their first 4 matches. So how did India get into the situation? Now, India didn't start off well and that certainly hurt them. They lost to Pakistan by 10 wickets in their opener. New Zealand too lost their opening match of the tournament against Pakistan. And then Pakistan went on to win 3 matches in 3, beating Afghanistan, as well as to, consolidate their position at the top and become favourites to qualify from this group. The India versus New Zealand match then became crucial and it was almost like a virtual knockout. The team that won the match would have gained the upper hand given they were considered to be favourites to win against the other teams. India didn't play well against New Zealand either. The batting failed again as the Kiwis bowled to their plans and restricted India to 110 for 7. New Zealand chased that down with 5.3 overs and 8 wickets to spare. Now that was a crucial win for the Kiwis. Pakistan then thumped Namibia to qualify for the semis. Afghanistan's big wins over Scotland and Namibia had meant they had actually had a very good net run rate. New Zealand needed to win by just a very good margin against Scotland to better their net run rate, as they couldn't, but they did manage to win by 16 runs. But they still had those two crucial points in the bag. India then needed to win big in the rest of the matches to keep their hopes alive and stay in contention. And they did turn things around, you know, with that big 66-run win over Afghanistan. But New Zealand kept going at it with another 52-run win that they notched up over Namibia, bagging another 2 points. India then absolutely thumped Scotland by 8 wickets that propelled them over Afghanistan, and their NRR jumped over both Afghanistan and New Zealand. Their fate, however, rested on this Afghanistan versus New Zealand match, because New Zealand was already on 6 points, and a win over Afghanistan in their last match would have definitely sealed a place for them in the semis. New Zealand did manage to beat Afghanistan comfortably to cruise into the semi-finals. If Afghanistan had won against the Kiwis, it would have kept them alive as well as, you know, just about. They would have needed to win big against New Zealand and then hope that Namibia beat India, which was highly unlikely to happen. While India would have been in a stronger position having the equation in front of them against Namibia, who was already knocked out. The Kiwis, though, proved too good for Afghanistan as they bowled caught and fielded brilliantly. India was left to rue at the start that they got. If only they had beat one of Pakistan and New Zealand, it would have been really interesting in the group. Alas, that was not to be, and we were knocked out. This World Cup surely has been one of the learnings, and in the 2022 T20 World Cup, we can expect a much better showing from India. With this, we draw curtains on the episode that served as a review of India's performance in this T20 World Cup. Thank you so much for tuning in. Please do follow and press the bell icon on Spotify and subscribe to the podcast on Google Podcasts for the latest episode updates, and please stay tuned. Do check out @NeverInTheBackFoot on Instagram and @NeverInTheBackOne on Twitter for the latest facts, trivia, quizzes, terminology, retweets, fresh tweets, and a lot more that's coming up this cricket season just for you. The podcast is also available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor, Overcast, and a lot of other platforms. So please do spread the word. Feel free to share your thoughts and suggestions for the already published episodes and recommendations for future topics. Do share this episode widely, and your support is really appreciated. See you next time, listeners. Cheers, stay safe, and take care. Bye for now.